Shannon Mary Dale Alexander was a member of the Kittigan, Zibi and Ashinabeg First Nation in Quebec, Canada. She was outgoing, active and a strong leader. In 2008, she was a 17-year-old cadet at her local high school and she had big plans for the future. Everyone who knew her knew she had a passion for taking care of people, and that was exactly what Shannon wanted to do when she graduated. She'd already applied and been accepted into a nursing school in Mont-Laurier, and her father, Brian, fully supported her. The both of them lived together in his apartment in Maniwaki, a small town outside of the reserve, and when he found out that Shannon wanted to be a nurse, Brian did everything he could to help her make that happen. She was due to start her first semester at nursing school in the fall, and by that time, Brian had already paid for her tuition. Pretty much all that was left for Shannon to do was finish up high school and enjoy her summer break, and that was exactly what she was planning on doing. She even knew who she wanted to spend the rest of her free time with, too. Shannon's best friend was Maisie Marie Ojik. Maisie would spend her time making her own clothes and just enjoying being with her friends and her family. The girls were in the same class at high school and both were members of the Kittigan, Zibi and Ashinabeg First Nation, and Maisie was also a caretaker at heart. She truly loved to help out whenever she could, and you could see that in how she chose to live her life. Maisie lived with her grandmother on the reserve, and every Sunday she made sure to mow her grandmother's lawn so that everything would be neat and tidy for her. This was all a pretty set routine, which was why when Maisie's mother, Laurie Ojik, went by the house on Saturday, September 5th, 2008, she was surprised to find Maisie outside mowing the lawn already. Maisie was out in the garden with Shannon when Laurie stopped up to ask Maisie why she was mowing the lawn a day early. Maisie told her mother that she was going to spend the rest of the weekend at Shannon's house, and that wasn't much of a surprise to anybody. The girls spent so much time together, and Laurie wasn't surprised at all when Maisie explained that Shannon's father, Brian, was going out of town to help his son paint his house in Ottawa, and Maisie didn't want to leave her friend on her own. Laurie then asked if the pair of them had any other plans for the weekend. Both Maisie and Shannon said that they were going to a dance at their high school later that night, and then they were just going to spend some time in Brian's apartment. Laurie told them that she hoped they had a good time, hugged and kissed her daughter, and then she left, but she could have no idea what was really waiting for her at the end of a weekend that just seemed to be like any other. Shannon and Maisie made it to the dance. Several classmates remember seeing them there, and some remember seeing them in a park across the school later that evening as well. According to some of those witnesses, the girls had left the park after they'd gotten into an argument with a boy, and Brian remembers seeing them back at the apartment that same night. He wasn't scheduled to leave for Ottawa until the following morning, and when he got up, Shannon was also up. She said that Maisie was still sleeping, and then she walked with Brian to the bus stop so that they could wait for his bus together. Brian then said goodbye to his daughter, and that was that. On September 7th, 2 days after Laurie had said goodbye to Maisie whilst she'd been mowing the lawn, Laurie started to get a bit worried. She'd asked Maisie to call when she'd made it to Shannon's, but Laurie hadn't heard anything from her in those 2 days that Maisie was supposedly there. She kept calling Maisie's phone, but she couldn't get through, and at that point, Laurie was just trying to keep a cool head. Maisie was 16. She was with her best friend. The girls had just gone to a party and they were alone in Brian's apartment. There were plenty of reasons for a teenager to not answer a call from their mother, so Laurie tried not to worry too much. Brian did the same thing when he got home on September 8th to find the apartment empty. The girls had clearly been there. Their clothes were there, their bags and wallets were there, and so was Shannon's medication. Chances were they'd gone out somewhere and would be back soon, so Brian didn't think much of it. It was only the following day when Laurie came back around to the apartment to ask Brian if he knew where the girls were that he really started to piece things together. The girls were gone, and wherever they were, they probably hadn't planned on being gone for that long. Laurie started calling the girls' friends, trying to track them down, but no one had seen them since Shannon had walked with Brian to the bus stop on Sunday morning. Both Brian and Laurie went to the police to try and report their daughters as missing, but they were met with a rather lackluster response. Because Shannon and Maisie both lived in different jurisdictions, both the police in Maniwaki and in the Kitigan Zibi Anishinaabeg Police Department were informed about the girls' disappearances, and both of them had the same response. They said that the girls had probably run away and would most likely turn up somewhere soon. Despite both Maisie and Shannon's families telling the police that neither of the girls would do that and telling them that they had left their belongings, no official case was opened. Brian's apartment wasn't searched, and the families were basically left to try and find the girls themselves. Friends and family began combing the neighbourhoods, handing out flyers and desperately trying to get word out that Shannon and Maisie were missing. It was only on September 12th, a full week after Brian had last seen Shannon at the bus stop, that the Kitigan Zibi Anishinaabeg Police Department finally acknowledged that the girls were missing. The department then organised a press conference to talk about the girls' disappearances, but even then, only journalists from the local paper showed up to report on it. On September 23rd, volunteers organised for more flyers to be handed out and to search the riverbank throughout the reserve. The families still had no help from local law enforcement, and the searches were conducted with boats that had been donated by the locals. In a desperate attempt to organise some sort of investigation and to enlist help from the public, Maisie's aunt, Maria Jacko, set up a website where they received several reports of sightings of the girls, but unfortunately, all of these tips led nowhere. In December 2008, the families invited Search and Rescue Global One to help with the searches. They conducted one in December and another one in May of 2009. Both searches involved members of the community and included about a 5 kilometre tract of land around Brian's apartment, but both came back empty-handed. Later in May 2009, bones were found close to the reserve and everyone feared the worst. Whilst testing was being conducted on the bones, the police suddenly decided to spring into action. They arranged for Shannon and Maisie's profiles to be added to their page of missing persons profiles, and they began organising press conferences to ask for the public for help in locating the girls. Reports of sightings in Montreal, Quebec, and Ottawa started coming in, and so did the results of the tests on the bones. They belonged to an animal, and had nothing to do with Shannon and Maisie's disappearances. Years went by with not much else to go off. In 2011, the investigators announced that it was possible that the girls had come into contact with a known local sex offender, but what had looked like something that could have been a serious break in the investigation turned out to be anything but. This announcement was quickly followed by the news that the sex offender in question had committed suicide the month before the announcement, and the girls' trails went cold once again. In 2013, during efforts to highlight the number of missing and murdered Indigenous women in Canada, Shannon and Maisie's cases were included in 2 awareness campaigns. One of these included a march at Parliament Hill, and the other was a Royal Canadian Mounted Police social media campaign that included the profiles of 8 other victims. In 2015, investigators released digitally age-progressed images of both Shannon and Maisie, but there wouldn't be any more movement in their cases until 2017, when another search was organised. This time the police were acting off a tip that had been pointing them toward a stretch of riverbank on the Kittigan ZB Reserve. This time the search included a forensic team, an emergency unit, dive teams and a small excavator. It was clear that they were looking for Shannon and Maisie's bodies, and not to bring the girls back to their families, alive and well. But once again, the search came back empty-handed. The investigators were looking in an area that was close to the Maniwaki Speedway, and construction on the speedway had caused massive amounts of disturbance along the riverbank in the years since the girls had disappeared. It was possible that the investigators were only following yet another dead end, but it's also entirely possible that they were actually searching in the right place, but the years had eroded most of it, if not all of it. The remaining evidence and the construction had tampered with any that was left. On the 10th anniversary of their disappearances, investigators tried to breathe new life into Shannon and Maisie's disappearances by setting up a command post in the local community centre. They also set up a digital billboard along Highway 105, which also goes through the reserve, with the details and contact information for tip lines. But it all may have been too little, too late. Investigators later announced that most of the tips they'd received in relation to Shannon and Maisie's cases came within the first 3 months of the investigation, and there has been very little else to work with since. Even though they'd first believed them to be runaways, the investigators have also changed their opinions on the circumstances regarding Shannon and Maisie's disappearances. The official stance of the investigation now is that Shannon and Maisie didn't leave Brian's home voluntarily. Their disappearances have been declared suspicious, at the very least, and the investigators say that there is still a distinct possibility that their disappearances ended with their murders. The girls' families still hold on to hope that they'll get answers, and that whoever it was that took Shannon and Maisie will eventually be brought to justice. Every year, both Shannon and Maisie's families hold a march and a vigil in the Kittigan ZB Reserve to keep the memory of the girls alive and the awareness of their cases alive. Both the investigators and the families are asking for anyone who knows anything about the girls and their cases to come forward so that Shannon and Maisie can be found and their families and friends can finally find peace.